Welcome to Veterans Voice on KBOO 90.7 FM here in Portland, Oregon. We're in Northwest Vets for Peace. I'm here with Bill and John this morning, and we're going to be talking with Bill Bennett Landau from Returning Veterans Project here in Portland. But first, I want to also later in the show, if we have time, we're going to talk a little about maybe with Bill about veteran suicides, which is very, very high. And but I got up to Oregonian this morning, and I always look in every day to see what the body count is here for Americans in Iraq and Afghanistan. And today I didn't see it in Oregonian. I did not see it.
I didn't either, Marvin.
And I always look for it. And they had a little story about Afghanistan, but they didn't have any of the body counts. And they never, ever have any of the body counts for the Iraqis or for the Afghans.
Well, that doesn't surprise me, because in the last political campaign, the war was not mentioned. They avoided that like the plague.
Yep. They didn't deal with it at all.
They don't want people informed about what the heck is going on there.
Yeah, as we know, 90% of all casualties in a war are civilians.
Yes.
So, boy, you know, there's been, you know, between 100,000 and 1 million Iraqis were killed.
Yeah.
So, you know, you're really not sure.
And we're the ones with the WMDs.
Yeah, yeah, right.
With so, Bush is out selling his book now.
Yeah,
and it's WMDs.
That was such a piece of junk that whole thing was just, that whole book was.
Seems like
was
some of
nothing.
The most accurate estimates on the deaths in Iraqi that you mentioned is 1.25 to 1.3 million.
Yeah, but we don't know because they don't keep track. I mean,
when you hear a number like that, what
it.
You know is that there's probably at least that many.
You
know there is, because the government doesn't keep track of that. You know, that was the old, we're going to beat the Vietnam syndrome thing. We're not going to do body counts
in
and all
Korea,
that.
In Korea, we were going to be home by Christmas.
Well, Vietnam too, you know. And they told us they were going to be home from Christmas in this last fiasco. You know, the war's never ended in Iraq.
No.
The war has never ended. So that is, it's never ended. It just continued to go from when they invaded Iraq the first time until this day.
Well,
50,000 troops are in Iraq today. So the music I wanted to play it today is Brothers in Arms, and it's by Dire Straits. And it's really a good song that, you know, talks about war and how stupid it is, you know, to be killing each other over, you know, nothing.
Working class people.
Yeah. Who was it, Bill, that said, I didn't raise my child to go to another country and kill your child?
I forget who, but that was really an apt phrase.
Yeah. We're going to, we have Bill on the phone now. Bill is with an organization called Returning Veterans Project. It's a free counseling and other health services for returning veterans and their families. And I heard about them, and I was very, very interested. And I went on their webpage and read all of the stuff about them. And they seem to be doing a really good job. And I emailed Bill, and I also, I called her. And I got back a phone call pretty fast. She called me back pretty fast. And she was at, sorry, Bill. She was at a stand down. And I want to talk about that. But, Bill, good morning.
Morning. Nice to be here.
Oh, it's good to talk to you. Can you give us a little bio on you first before we start?
Sure. I have worked in the nonprofit field in Portland for many years. Mostly previous to this with organizations that serve children, women, and families.
Oh, great.
And I became involved in Returning Veterans Project. I was hired as the first full-time executive director just about a year ago now.
Mm-hmm.
And am enjoying it very much. My son, my youngest son, is an Iraq War veteran. So this issue is important to me.
From this one or the 1991?
This one, yeah.
This
yeah,
one?
I'm not quite that old.
Sorry. Sorry.
That's okay.
So go ahead, and you're from Oregon? You're an Oregonian?
Yeah, I was about 11 when we moved here, so I'm almost a real Oregonian.
Yeah, we'll let you be. We'll let you stay. Byers here is from California, and we let him stay.
He's
an Oregonian.
I've been here since 65. Does that count?
So I think so.
So can you give us a little background on the Returning Veterans Program?
Sure. It's a five-year-old organization that became a nonprofit in 2008. It was started by a licensed clinical social worker, Carol Levine, in 2005. She was watching the news, reading the paper, and hearing about the suffering of folks returning from Iraq, and she really wanted to do something. She decided that what she knew how to do was counseling, and in just a short amount of time, 25 other therapists joined her, and they created our service model, and that was in February of 2005. At the current time, we have almost 90 people in our directory, and everyone who's in the directory is a licensed and insured professional. They're either in the mental health field or what's called the somatic health field, which means acupuncturists, chiropractors, naturopaths, and massage therapists. And they give up a slot in their practice to serve returning veterans and their families for free.
Uh-huh.
And they're doing really great work. To support them, we offer two trainings a year on issues related to working with military families and veterans. The last one we did was on October 9th on military sexual trauma.
Wow.
And then on April 30th, we're doing a workshop on treating couples after deployment.
What's the date on that?
April 30th.
April 30th?
Yeah.
Okay, and that's on couples for the...
military couples after deployment.
Uh-huh. And the that sounds really good. That sounds great.
Yeah.
So what was the... when you did the one on sexual trauma... Boy, that, you know, that touches us. We've done shows on that because to us, you know, that's a really horrible thing. And
that's a huge issue.
Oh,
yeah.
Talk about it.
Yeah, and estimates are about one out of three women in the military are victims of military sexual trauma, which really just means rape at the hands of somebody that you're working with every day. You know, another service member. Could be your commanding officer, it might not be. And more men are starting to come forward with this experience, although they rarely report, but people who do this work have worked with men who've experienced this as well. So it's a huge issue for people. The resulting diagnosis, just like with rape in the civilian community, is post-traumatic stress disorder.
Yes.
But, you know, a lot of folks are being denied service-connected benefits because if they didn't report it, you know, there's not much that can be done.
Right,
and
right.
So that's a huge issue, I think.
Oh, I think it's a really huge issue.
Yeah. And the military is going to have to start dealing with that.
Oh, they have to start dealing with it. They have to start dealing with it. And these women and men, you know, they have to feel safe enough to speak up.
Is the incidents in the military greater than the incidents on the outside? And if they're, what might be the connection, do you think?
You know, I don't know that the incidents is greater, but in the military, I don't know. I know that oftentimes when we... in the past, when we've opened a base somewhere, rape has gone up in that community. And, you know, rape is not a sexual crime as much as it is about power and control.
Oh, yeah.
Definitely. It's definitely.
You know, yeah. So I think that's an issue. And I've been at the training that we did, the woman's name, you might have talked to her as well. Her name is Elizabeth Stinson.
Oh, yes. Yes.
Yeah, and she's one of our providers.
Oh, really?
Training for us, yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, and she talked about the incidents in the Marines going up and the most vulnerable guy being what she called blanketed and then gang raped. Atrocities happen, I think, wherever you have a bunch of, I don't want to say men gathered together, but, you know, oftentimes when you have you know, the military culture is pretty patriarchal, so, you know, I think those things can happen.
It's just definitely, definitely patriarchal, and it seems that... Go ahead, Bill.
Go ahead. I'm just saying, you know, more and more people in the military are becoming aware of it, just like they are of the suicide that you mentioned earlier.
Yeah, we want to talk about that a little bit, too.
Yeah, I'm hopeful that things will start to happen to make it better for people who choose to serve.
Yeah, one of the things that has to really change in the military, and it hasn't changed since ever, I don't think it ever, is this whole macho thing that goes on in the military. The whole thing that you don't, you know, you don't squeal on your buddies and you don't do any of all that. You know, that has to change. And one of the things with rape in the military is they don't speak up.
Yeah, and it's evidently, from what Elizabeth said at the training, it's kind of up to every commanding officer as to how they deal with it.
Oh, well.
And, you know, some people really do deal with it. They, once it's reported, they handle it. But sometimes, you know, people are just ignored, and they're given, you know, sometimes they're even punished by being given a mission that's for them to do.
Transfers.
You know? Once they tell on somebody, then, you know, things can happen to them that are almost just as bad. So
right.
I think that's a big reason why people don't report it.
Right.
They're afraid of what's going to happen.
Yeah.
You know? From what I've read is that one of the ways that the military deals with it is they don't deal with it.
Yeah, kind of like don't ask, don't tell.
Yeah, that's another one that's got to be gotten rid of. That's such a horrible thing. Don't ask, don't tell, so horrible. And they keep just putting it off and putting it off. I just read, Bill, an article that says that something like 70 to 75% of all the people in the military don't support don't ask, don't tell. You know, they don't care.
Kind of like the general community, I think.
Community in general. They just don't care. Yeah. You know, they don't care. You know,
yeah. One of the things that I really love about the Returning Veterans Project is that we really try to be apolitical. You know, all of our providers are independent caregivers. They all have their own beliefs about the war. Some of them are longtime pacifists. Many of them come from military families. But all of them, what they really want to do is support people who are serving. And I think that's a very different mindset in the community than it was.
Oh, boy. I think you're right.
Yes, indeed.
I think you're right. I think that that people are slowly but surely getting that idea that, you know, the one thing about a group that I like, Vietnam Veterans Against the War, and what they say is support the troop and not the war. You know, take care of the soldiers and the Marines and that, you know, whether you support the war or not, you take care of, you separate it and you take care of the people coming back.
Yeah, that gives room for some gray area. It's not as black and white, you know, as it used to be.
Yeah. Go ahead and talk some more about some of the other projects besides the rape counseling and that.
We do a lot of work with children, military children. We have counselors who, that's their area of expertise. And, you know, children during deployments, what some of the research shows that mental health issues go up for younger children during deployments. They get depressed, they have anxieties. And then for older children, adolescents, if any of you have ever gone through raising an adolescent, which, you know, I have. They have issues anyway of separation. That's what they're supposed to be doing. But if you have somebody, a parent who's in the National Guard and has been gone 3 or 4 years, you know, since you turned 13, it can be a huge issue for adolescents. And you can imagine what their response is when somebody comes home after a year-long deployment.
Yeah.
You know, you basically... You can't tell me what to do anyway, even if you were here every day. But if you've been gone for a year, you know, you don't know me anymore. You're different. I'm not going to listen to you. So the issues can be really big. And so we're really fortunate to have people who are skilled in working with children. And we also have a lot of people who do marriage counseling.
Mm.
And as you know, divorce rates are pretty high now in the military.
Oh, they're really high.
Families. Yeah. Military families are really resilient for the most part, but I think that the multiple deployments that the Guard and Reserve members in Oregon are having to do and in other places, I think that really has an impact on a long-term relationship.
Yeah, I think that the military has started, you know, they don't like to admit to anything, but I've heard and read a few things where they have started talking about some of the problems that, you know, these deployments, these folks having to go 3 and 4 and 5 times are starting to have, you know, that is part of the problem. And another one with the children, you know, having that problem with their parents, when these men and women come back from a war, they got PTSD. And that does, you know, that doesn't bode well for, you know, for parenting.
Yeah.
And that's a real problem. And that with the counseling for that makes a lot of sense to me.
The thing that's that I'm interested in is the economy of the situation, how the families that are left behind are able to take care of themselves with the reduced without the support of the breadwinner, if indeed the person is the breadwinner.
Right. Yeah. Have you folks had any problems with that? Have you, you know, talking to some of the caregivers, is that a part of the
economics?
Yeah, is that a real problem with these families?
Sure. You know, 51% of the 41st came home unemployed.
Wow.
And there were 2,600 of them. And I think I heard that 150 chose to stay in Iraq because they knew they would be unemployed when they came home, so they are doing another tour.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so the economy for everybody in Oregon and across the United States is an issue. But I think for military families, National Guard members who are supposed to have their jobs when they come home and then they're gone, you know, that's a huge issue for people.
Oh, it's a big issue. And
I know that the unemployment department right now is just got a grant specifically for the 41st.
Wow.
To get them training to help them get jobs. And I believe that spouses can also participate in that program. And it's, as far as I know, it's every county in Oregon has money for that. So that's one good thing that Workforce Oregon is really doing. They're really working to get vets employed. And that's one of the things that happened at the stand down.
Yeah, talk about the stand down. Where was it at? And talk about it.
Why don't we do that, Belle, right after the station break here?
Okay, great.
We like people to know that you're listening to Veterans Voice on KBOO Portland, and one of the reasons we like you to know that is so you can tell other people to listen in. This is an important topic that we're talking about today with the Returning Veterans Project, because there are so many returning veterans. So I think part of the point of this program would be to get some information to you, and that when you see or know of another veteran, just let them know that there is such an organization called Returning Veterans Project. And we're talking today to the executive director, Belle Bennett Lanau. So thank you for being with us.
We got your last name right, didn't we? Is it Landau?
Yes, that's correct. Yeah.
Great. Yeah, because I saw that Belle, and I have ancestors of mine back in the early 1600s in back in Virginia, and she was a Belle, Belle.
Oh,
so
nice.
I thought that was pretty interesting.
It's interesting with
the
knee on it. Yeah. Go ahead and talk about the stand down and where it was and the whole thing.
Okay, the stand down was held at the Coliseum. It was put on by the VA and Central City Concern, and I think Workforce Oregon and some other organizations. And the last one we had was in March, so they're doing them pretty regularly in Portland. And it's a 1 to 3 day event for homeless veterans. It's kind of a one-stop shopping center. The first day, the 16th, was for social service and VA services, so that and clothing and things like haircuts. People could just come in and have a meal and look at all the services that are available for them. And then the second day was employers that want to hire vets. And so homeless vets could go and talk to employers, submit their resumes, things like that. It's just a way to try to get people employed or learn about housing programs, services that they might need if they are homeless. You know, the homeless population, unfortunately, is made up of a lot of veterans.
Oh, yeah. It's up to 33%. Of the homeless veterans, homeless are veterans, and with these folks coming back now, they're getting right into it too. You know, these Iraqi vets and these Afghan vets are starting to hit into that 33% population.
Yeah,
One of the things that's very helpful, Bill, is on your website you have a vision statement that goes into some of the things that you do. I think it would be helpful to the people for them to know a little more of the spectrum of things that you do.
Okay. Yeah. One of the tenets of our organization is that the services are confidential, so I have no idea, as the executive director and primary fundraiser, who we're serving, which is kind of a unique problem to have as a fundraiser. But it's really important because I think that's one of the reasons that people use our services. They know that it's going to be confidential if they do have PTSD or are an MST survivor.
That's very important.
That's really, really important.
Right. Yeah. For those people who just don't want to go to the VA or they have gone to the VA and they just need other support, I think we're a great avenue for them to get help.
Oh, I do too. How many, at the stand down, was there a lot of women vets?
You know, not very many.
Yeah, see, that's a real problem. That's a real problem because the women vets don't seem to be really taking advantage of the stuff out there for them. Even up on the hill, the VA up on the hill, they started a whole medical section for women veterans.
Yeah, they just opened that in September.
Yeah, they just opened it, and it's really, really good. And I go up there. I get all my medical up there, and I talk to the women veterans up there, and they really like it, but they said there's just the women veterans just aren't seeming yet to really, connect and get into that. Which
I've been at a couple of workshops where women vets have been on panels, women from these current wars, and they, like women who've served in the past, many of them feel like they're not really veterans.
Oh. Mm.
And they've been told that, actually, by if they were a cook in Iraq, but they weren't, quote unquote, in a combat zone.
Mm-hmm.
They just feel like they're not deserving to be called that. And I think that's a real challenge that we have, is to help people understand that if you served, you're a veteran.
Right.
And you deserve support.
Mm-hmm.
So that's one of the issues that I think comes up for women.
You've talked to female veterans who really felt they weren't a veteran because they weren't in combat arms.
Yeah. Absolutely.
Wow, that's just amazing. Because a veteran's a veteran, no matter if you served in combat or you didn't serve in combat. If you served in the peacetime army whatever, you're still a veteran.
I know.
And you have a right to get all that care. And I would think, and I would think that women, female veterans, would have the PTSD, post-traumatic stress disorder, for them would be really a hard one to deal with.
Yeah, there hasn't been a whole lot of research on women with combat-related PTSD, but some of the beginning research I'm starting to see, it sounds like if you are a woman and you've served in combat and have PTSD, it's more entrenched. Homelessness is a greater risk even for women.
Yes.
And drug and alcohol abuse.
Yes. Because we talked to this another... I think it was National Gulf War Resource Center people, and I think it was those guys, and they were saying that one of the problems that the women veterans have was drug addiction.
Yeah.
They were saying that the drug addiction for the women in Iraq and Afghanistan was unbelievable.
Yeah.
For these women.
I would believe that.
I would believe it too, and trying to get help for that.
Mm-hmm.
And they were talking about, like you just did, about the homelessness. And usually these women have children.
I know. A lot of women have children. Oprah did a show a couple of weeks ago with some homeless Afghanistan veterans who are women. And they just really had that mindset that they could not ask for help. One had been a sergeant and came home. She was living out of her car.
Mm.
And it was very, very sad. The other had a couple of children. And... I just think that we need to get the word out that help is out there. Central City Concern has a program now for women veterans specifically, and there's some housing available. I think there's 22 beds, and I don't remember if it was Transition Projects or Central City Concern, but one of them has beds open for women veterans.
Go ahead,
Bill. Think, what is the estimate? 250,000 women are now serving?
That's what I've heard,
Yeah, and I heard by 2014, about 40% of the military will be made up of women.
Wow, that's amazing.
We need to deal with these issues.
Got to deal with it now. Got to start. Well, we should have started 30 years ago, but...
Yeah.
Well, one of the problems, as I see it, is the VA has done something that makes it difficult for women and those that haven't served in combat situations, is they have different classes of veterans, and the benefits available to these different classes are determined by the conditions under which you served.
I'm hoping Congress will make some more changes.
Yeah, I think they're talking about that. But you know, this whole means test that some of these folks have to take, you know, to get when they drafted me. And drafted Bill and John enlisted, but when they drafted us guys, they didn't, you know, they didn't give us a means test. John was drafted. They're not, you know, they didn't say, well, you guys, you're going to be a 1A soldier. So, but why should the health care or mental health or disability compensation or anything be based on anything but your service? And
right.
These women, you know, they're veterans.
That's the way I see it.
That's the way I look at it. You know, and the veterans, the women, Belle, that I talked to up on the Hill, they are really thankful for that clinic.
Absolutely.
They are thankful for that clinic.
That's a huge shift, is that increasing awareness that women have different needs than men.
Yeah.
Including obstetrics and gynecology, you know, that they don't need a prostate exam.
Right. Yeah, they don't need all that stuff. But
yeah, that's one of the reasons that we have this program, is so you can get the word out to people. If you know any veterans or families that have veterans, let them know that there is a wonderful project called Returning Veterans Project. And it's easy to find if you, on your computer, just put Returning Veterans Project into the browser, and it'll come up and you can get to it. And we're pleased here today on Veterans Voice on KBOO Portland to be talking to the executive director, Belle Bennett-Landau. And so we thank you for getting that information out. And I just want to underscore one other thing that you mentioned briefly, and that was about the confidentiality. And
right.
I think that is so important, because I think one of the major problems in the military itself is that everything you do goes on your record, and therefore if you have any problems, a problem goes on your record, and if you want any advancement or progress, that's a negative. And so the Returning Veterans Project is wonderful in that confidentiality. I think that is really so very, very important.
Belle, I think it's really, I haven't given out your phone number. Could you give your phone number out where they can contact you guys?
Absolutely. It's 503-933-4996.
Great. And I want to go back to the programs that you have. We've talked about the counseling. And talk about some of the medical stuff that you have.
You know, we have several acupuncturists now in the Portland area, a couple in Grants Pass area, and I think maybe one in Vancouver. And acupuncture has really been shown to be helpful in relieving symptoms of PTSD, so a lot of returning veterans are making use of acupuncture. We have chiropractors. And they are always full. The few that we have are always full because, you know, when you are in Iraq and Afghanistan and you're out on a mission, you're carrying those really heavy packs. Estimates are about 80 pounds is what you're carrying. And some folks are jumping out of helicopters with that stuff on them. And they really get a lot of knee and back injuries. So our chiropractors have been really helpful in helping with that. We have some naturopaths as well. I think people don't know as much about doctors who are naturopaths, so I think that's a good way to get some care as well. A lot of our families that come to us, the spouses, say, don't have health insurance, and maybe if they're a partner and they're not married, they were in a car accident while their service member is deployed, they can come to us and get any of these services as well. So I think that's really important. You know, the VAs primarily serve service members and veterans, families.
Yeah, they don't
do some brief bereavement services and educational services.
Right.
But families need support, you know, during and after deployments, and that's what we're about as well, is supporting them and helping them with what they need.
Oh, yeah,
we also give out a lot of resource referral information. We get calls all the time, not just from Oregon, but from around the country, with people wanting to know where they can go to get support, and we're happy to do that as well.
Oh, yeah, that's really a good thing to, you know, for veterans to have. You know, I just think back on it, where a lot of these vets just slip through the cracks.
Yeah.
A lot of these veterans are slipping through the cracks. And do you have any, I think we talked a little bit, psychological counselors available?
Oh, we have tons. That's
okay, let's talk about 80%, that.
Yeah, 80% of our providers are mental health.
Okay, let's talk about that. Yeah. Go ahead.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
So, you know, some of them work with veterans only. Some of them work with vets and families. Some work with children only. Some work with women only. It just depends on their particular area of expertise. I've had the opportunity to meet almost all 90 of them now.
Wow.
And I would say about 50% have some type of relationship to the military, and that's why they want to do this. We have orientation trainings that are mandatory that they come to before they join our directory, and I always ask them, you know, why they want to work with returning veterans and their families, and that deep connection, I think, is what brings most of them. Either they knew somebody, if they're of my age, they knew somebody who was killed in Vietnam. Mm. They were married to a Vietnam vet, and I say were married.
Yep.
Because almost everyone I've met who was married to a Vietnam vet is no longer.
Yeah, I'm a three-time loser.
You know, yeah, I think that's very sad, actually.
Yeah.
A lot of them were military brats, and so they really understand the culture. So they just have a wide range of experience, and they're so caring and compassionate and open to whatever comes through the door that, you know, I just really appreciate the work that they're doing with people. Oh. For no cost. They give up their time. Many of them will do an appointment on the weekends, you know, if somebody needs it, or in the evening. So we just really appreciate their service.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's a great way to give back to people.
Yeah. So what's really the breakdown in male-female counselors? Do you have, I mean, yeah, that may sound kind of weird, but some women want to go to a woman counselor.
Yeah, I would say that probably 60 or 70% of our counselors are women.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
You know, women tend to volunteer more than men. Did you know that?
I didn't know that.
Yeah.
I'm glad to hear that. That sounds great.
Women are the caregivers.
Yeah, they're definitely the caregivers.
Yeah, I think that's a big part of it, isn't it?
Yeah.
But we do have a lot of men and
sure.
male chiropractors and acupuncturists who are really wonderful with people.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, if you are a woman and you want to see a woman, that certainly can happen.
Yeah. What do you think of all your programs and that we've talked about, what's the most used one?
Counseling. Yeah.
Counseling.
And then I would say massage also. We only have about 5 massage therapists right now, so if anybody's listening and you want to join us,
tell them how to join you. Tell them how they can get join you.
They can either apply to become a provider just by going on the website,
mm-hmm.
or they can give us a call and we'll talk to them about it and walk them through it. And the same with somebody who's seeking services. If a returning veteran, and that means, you know, anyone post 9/11, doesn't have access to a computer, and you want to find a provider, you can call us and we'll go to the website and find you a provider if we have one. There's a great need in more rural areas of Oregon, you know, because we don't have a real military base here.
Right.
There's a lot of people in outlying areas who get isolated and don't get the support they need.
Mm-hmm.
So, in the last month, we got 4 people in Eugene, which is great because
yeah.
there's a big need there. So
well, the university's there, and veterans are going to school.
Absolutely. Every community college and university in Oregon is packed.
Oh, with yeah, with veterans.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, they definitely. How about legal counseling?
You know, one of the one of my board members is an attorney who does and a veteran, and he does a lot of work with returning veterans. So we do have, if somebody has a need, we can sometimes get them connected to somebody. He knows a lot of people.
Yeah, so that would be really a good to get hooked up with if you're an attorney and you want to help veterans to get up with the Returning Veterans Project. That would be great.
At least give us their name and contact information. Yeah, 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 absolutely. That if we needed to, we could connect people quickly to them. That would be great.
Yeah. Do you work with the Lewis and Clark Law School?
Yeah, actually, we do. Some of our providers are professors there.
Yeah.
And in the counseling program. Yeah, they're great. They're going to give us space for our upcoming training in April and trainings in the future. They're going to donate space up there, which we're really pleased to know. And we have them on our website, the program, the law program. For.
So what's the thing in April? I forgot. I'm sorry.
Treating military couples after deployment.
Yeah, couples after. Hey, talk about the, I read on the website, I don't think it's on there now, but tomorrow, there's going to be a traumatic brain injury. What was that? Do you remember that?
No, I don't.
Darn, it was on. I wished I'd have put that down.
It was on the website?
Yeah, it was on the website. Yeah, I don't think it's
there. Pam must have put it on there. I didn't see it.
It was about traumatic brain injury. It was a forum for a doctor. A doctor, she was going to give for caregivers a seminar, I think, on traumatic brain injury.
Wow. And,
yeah, wow. I wished I would have. I saw that. In fact, I may have written it down. Hold on.
Okay.
Northwest Cranial Association.
Oh.
Dr. Ann Hill. Do you remember now?
I don't. You know, I don't see everything that you put up here. So
yeah, I thought that was really interesting. So I wrote that down. It's at the.
You know, there's a couple of organizations. About, I think there's three or four organizations in Oregon that deal with traumatic brain injury, and they're really starting to move into the veteran community.
Oh, boy. I can see why.
Yeah, exactly. And I was in a meeting a couple of weeks ago, a military resource meeting, and somebody from the National Guard was talking about the 162nd that just returned from Afghanistan, and he said that 70% had been in one or more IED explosions.
Oh, boy.
So, you know, that's a huge issue. And if you combine that with PTSD, then you really have people.
Yeah. I'm going to give, since that was on your website, and it was Northwest Cranial Association, and her name is Dr. Ann Hill, and 503-313-3605. And that's the number she put as a contact number. So if.
That's great.
Yeah, that. Folks, because TBI is, they didn't, you know, and I'm a Vietnam vet, Bill's Korea, John's Vietnam. They didn't really deal with TBI when we were in there, and we got banged around a lot.
Right.
I mean, rocket attacks and mortars and all that. And that rang your bell. I'm telling you, that rang your bell.
I bet it did. And, you know, brain science has, we've really progressed in that area in the last decade anyway. So. Mm-hmm.
And one thing about the VA, the VA is really starting to work on traumatic brain injury stuff. And that's really important.
It is important.
That is so important because, you know, that was really overlooked a lot by the general public. Even by us guys, you know.
Yeah, absolutely.
Because we never thought about it.
It wasn't very well known until recently.
Yeah.
So, and there's a lot of good research being done on it and services, you're right.
Yeah. And then
having these organizations in the community, they run support groups. Mm-hmm. They have websites with resource links. So I think the Brain Injury Support Community is the newest nonprofit in Portland, and Pat Murray is the executive director.
Go ahead and say that one again.
The Brain Injury Support Community.
Okay.
And Pat Murray is the executive director.
Mm-hmm. Is there a phone number? Do you probably don't have the phone number?
While we talk, I'll look for her card. Somewhere in my stack.
Okay, that sounds good.
We're sure glad that you're listening to Veterans Voice on KBOO Portland today because we're talking to the executive director, Belle Bennett Landau, of the Returning Veterans Project. And this is an important thing because there are so many veterans out there now, and it's a confidential service. I think that's so important to note. And Bill, if you will, if you could just comment, it was interesting. The title says Returning Veterans Project, but also talk a little bit about, you have some interest in, and there's a line on your website that talks about active duty personnel, and if they're going to be deployed, it might be a good idea to contact you. Would you talk about that for just a little bit, Bill?
Pre-deployment.
Yes, absolutely. We are available also for people who are going to be deployed, or, you know, they're on a leave, whatever, and they need support. They can contact us and find a provider, absolutely. I don't think that we're seeing very many of those people. Most of the people that we see have already been deployed. But we're definitely open to serving them, and we would like to serve them.
That sounds great. So most of the folks that you're dealing with now are Oregon National Guard folks returning, their families,
and reserve members,
and reserves. How about veterans of the regular Army that got out? You know,
well, I'm sure that we see them, but since I have no idea who the heck we're serving, other than, you know, what we do is the therapists and the other providers know them, but when they put them in our database so that we can actually try to track numbers and hours served, all clients are just given a number.
Yeah, good.
So I don't have a name. I don't know what their service was. Uh-huh. If they want to contact us and thank us for the services, we've had some people do that. A Marine who became a National Guard, Eddie Black, you might have had him on your show. I don't know.
I know who he is.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he's fabulous. And I call him my marketing person because he's always talking about us when he gives a spiel about PTSD. He does a great PowerPoint presentation, you know, and he's seen one of our providers, and we really appreciate
him. Oh, that's good. That's good.
Yeah. So, I just can't tell you what service branch most people are from, but I would say because we're in Oregon and we're the mostly National Guard.
Yeah, Army.
About half of the folks we serve are veterans and half are family members.
That is amazing. To me, that's amazing. Because the families are so left out of this thing, left out of this thing.
I agree.
Yeah. Before we end here, could you give us your phone number again, your address, and your email?
Great. And donations.
Donations too.
Really, really wonderful.
Oh, yeah.
We're a little low at this time of year.
Oh, yeah.
503-933-4996, and we're located at 833 Southeast Main, box number 122. It's not a P.O. box, just box number, Portland 97214.
Okay, and
I did find it's the phone number for the Brain Injury Support Community.
Okay.
It's 503-224-9069, and their website is braininjuryhelp.org.
Yeah, and your email is mail@returningveterans.org?
That's correct, yes.
Do you have
the website is just returningveteransproject.org.
Yeah, .org. Do you have a quick ending for us? Talk about anything you want.
If anybody out there is a provider or a military family member or a veteran, and if you want to serve or if you want services, please just contact us. We would be happy to serve you. We would be honored to serve you. And I really appreciate being on your program.
Oh,
thank you very much.
Bill, it's our pleasure. And you guys are doing a great job. And keep up the work. And I get a lot of phone calls from returning veterans. And I'm going to plug them into you guys now.
Great. Perfect. Thank you so much.
Oh, it's our pleasure. Thanks a lot, Bill.
Uh-huh. Bye-bye.
Yep. We've been talking to Bell Bennett Landau from Returning Veterans Project on KBOO 90.7 FM, Portland, Oregon. And our last few minutes here, I wanted to talk a little bit about something that's really what I think is a problem that's just now coming to the surface. And all of us guys, we've known about it, and that's the suicide rate of veterans. Not just these returning guys and men and women, and not just the suicides in the military, but suicides from all veterans of all of our wars, that from World War II on, and that the suicide rate is rising. In Oregon, it is really, really rising. The suicide rate for male veterans is twice as much as it is for the general public. I couldn't find any data on female veterans, and I looked and I looked and I looked, and I just couldn't find any data on the female veterans. 28% of all suicides in Oregon are veterans. 28% or 45%. I had it written down. It's really a high number.
Yeah, I thought the number that I really heard Marvin was 45%, and the scary part is that the percent and the numbers is in the returning from Iraq and Afghanistan.
The male veterans' suicide is 45.7 per 100,000, which is really high compared to the general population. If you're a veteran or a family member of a veteran, and you notice that you're having trouble, that you're depressed, or drinking more, or using drugs more, or whatever, please, please, please contact the Vet Center, or contact the National VA hotline, which is 1-800-273-8255. Or go to your doctor, or go up on the hill. If you're a veteran, go up on the hill, because they'll take care of you up there. And I understand why someone would commit suicide after being in a war zone, and I can understand the pressure and everything, but you can be helped. You can be helped. And we don't want any more statistics like the suicide statistics that Oregon has, or across the country. We need to have our veterans taken care of, and the VA will do that. The VA will do that.
They will do it very well. And one of the things I think we can be even proactive.
Do it very well.
And this is not from a clinical standpoint. This is just a personal thing. Where if you know a veteran, I think you might walk up to him and say, and just tell him, I've heard there's a high rate of suicide. If you are ever thinking of suicide, let me know, or call someone and be proactive in it. Because I remember when someone talked to me and asked me if I'd ever thought of committing suicide, my first reaction was to say, absolutely not, because we know that there's a stigma attached to that. And who would want to admit that they were even thinking of it? So I think it's good to get the word out and say, hey, we're not surprised that there's a possibility of you thinking suicide. We can help.
Right now, if you're in the military and you're having a problem, the military now has the ability. They want you to come in. They want you to talk about your problems. They're beating down that old stigma, the macho stigma. You can go to the base you're on. There's counselors on those bases that will help you out. There's a general named General Mark Graham, and General Graham's son committed suicide, and he was a soldier. He was a soldier, and he's really helping veterans. He was at Fort Carson, and he started all those programs down there for the soldiers down there and their families. His son committed suicide. His other son died in Iraq. He was killed by an IED. So General Graham is very, very understanding about suicide, and he's trying to get that stigma taken away. His wife, Carol Graham, is a wonder. We became friends in the last couple months, and she is out all the time talking about suicide. She's out going to every place that'll have her to talk. Tomorrow she's going to be at a conference down south talking about suicides. Her husband's in the Pentagon. They're talking about suicides, how to bring this down. Because suicide, if you go to a war, PTSD, is going to be a problem for you, go get counseling. There's no stigmatism to it now. There's not to worry about it. Go get the help. Go get the help. You can be helped. If a family member is having trouble, you know, get them help. Get them help. Suicide's just not an answer, guys.
Yes.
It's just not an answer anymore. You can get that help. If a general, a two-star general, is telling his troops, man, there's nothing wrong with coming in and getting help, then go in and get the help you need. That's all I can say to it. You know, get the help. Call the Vet Center here in Portland. Call the VA National Hotline. Go up on the hill. Go to your private doctor or whatever. You know, you can get help. You can get help. And suicides, you know, is not an option anymore, folks. It's not an option. Bill?
And even if you just open the door by saying, I'm just feeling a little down, a little depressed,
yep.
That'll open the door.
Go ahead, Bill.
You've been listening to Veterans Voice on KBOO 90.7 FM. We've been talking with Bill Bennett Landau of Returning Veterans Project. We'll be back on November 17th at 9 a.m. You can hear our old programs at our old shows at kboo.fm/veterans voice. Stay tuned now for Air Cascadia.
And we'll see you next month.